both, and they took it out and wondered, you know, how far it had spread and all this stuff. And so we all been praying and really on our knees. And she got word this week that it is completely gone as far as they can tell, and she will need no treatment or anything like that. So that is really exciting. So awesome. Yay God, huh? And then Dave mentioned, we're going to be talking about, I just wanted to mention that we're going to have a Vision Sunday next week. This is going to be our annual Vision Sunday. We've been doing this for years, and I'm going to be talking about the vision. Hopefully, it's not my vision, as Dave said. We're praying that it's God's vision and our vision together. And for this next year, we also have, you know, our budget presentation at that time and a vote on that. So we like to say that, you know, for members of this church, this is as close as we get to sort of mandatory required attendance. But we invite the rest of you to come. If you're a regular attender or even a visitor, we invite you to be a part of that as well. We'll be having kind of a regular worship service, and then towards the end of it will be this other part. So go ahead and be a part of that. Also, coming up in just a few weeks, a number of weeks still, but our Count Me In is going to be coming up, and you're going to be hearing about this, and I want to just highlight it because I know some of you are new to the community and you don't know what this is. Count Me In is a Saturday. We've been doing this twice a year. We go out and we work on the homes of elderly and needy people in the community. And we began doing this because we were involved in Meals on Wheels. As we delivered meals, we discovered there were a lot of elderly people who didn't have the ability to take care of their yards anymore or this kind of stuff, and some needed, you know, things like wheelchair ramps. And so we started this project called Count Me In, and we've been doing it now for probably 3 or 4 years, and it's a wonderful project. Probably over half of the church participates in this, so I want to really encourage you to think about this on October 9th, being a part of Count Me In, signing up for it when the sign-ups come. We are kind of getting known in the community for this project. People who don't know much about our church, they go, oh, that's the church where, you know, you're serving in the community. And so it's a great way to represent really the heart of Christ in this. And it's also good for us. We meet people. And so there's just kind of blessings all around. And I want to just kind of highlight that and get that out there for you to be thinking about. October 9th is Count Me In. So those are two things I want to talk about that. You also have in your hand a home group study guide. One of the things that I was mentioning was last Sunday is that this is the time for you to kind of think about church and your involvement in church. This is time to look over the different offerings that there are, the courses, the opportunities, and Dave highlighted the Alpha course coming up. This home group guide contains all of the new home groups and the home groups, continuing home groups that will be starting here in the beginning of October. And I really encourage you to take a look at this, to go through it. Think about if you're not connected to a home group where you might get plugged in. A lot of wonderful things happening in the home group. We see it as just an integral part of the ministry of this church where you can really grow and make friends. That's what home groups are really about. So I want to encourage you on that. And then since last Sunday, we talked about forgiveness last Sunday. And since that time, I had a number of conversations with people on the subject of forgiveness. And I think it's common for all of us to have a lot of, you know, these issues where maybe the need for forgiveness is tied up into it. And I just want to encourage you, if you were one of those people last week, or maybe if you didn't hear the sermon last week, or you wanted to connect in with this topic, or there's something going on in your life regarding forgiveness, I just want to encourage you not to let that ball drop. To bring the need, you know, maybe there's some bitterness or some struggle towards somebody and it's just sort of a gnarly mess and you're trying to untangle it. Bring that to your home group. Share that with people in your home group. Ask for prayer. Maybe get together with a smaller group of people or somebody that you trust. The leadership in this church can help you work out a process of coming to a place of forgiveness. We want to grow and we want to spiritually, we want to see you grow spiritually. And one of the things that really becomes a barrier to that oftentimes is this kind of lack of forgiveness or bitterness. And so I just felt really encouraged to remind you of that because I had so many conversations this week with people dealing with forgiveness and the need for forgiveness. Let's not let that ball drop. Let's really go through the healing process in that and really open ourselves to God's movement in that. So, great. Those are my preliminaries. Let's go ahead and open up our Bibles to the Gospel of Luke. Gospel of Luke. And this is going to be Luke chapter 6, verse 38 that we're going to be looking at today. And if you don't have a Bible, we've got some that we can pass to you. And those are Bibles you can keep, take home with you. If you need a Bible, just take that one with you. It's on page 716 in that Bible that we hand out to you. Now, Jesus has been saying a lot of counterintuitive type things in the Sermon on the Plateau, which is sort of Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount. You remember the very beginning, poverty is a gift, he said. You need to understand that when you're poor and hungry and suffering and rejected, that's a good place to be because God can reach into your life in that moment and make changes. He said, love your enemy, right? There's another kind of counterintuitive thing. What we like to do is, harm our enemy or somehow get him or needle him or something. And Jesus says, love your enemy, sort of a counterintuitive thing. We talked about judging and not judging and not condemning. And again, that natural tendency. And Jesus says, don't judge, don't condemn. He talked about learning so far in our study of the Sermon on the Plateau. And that's not so counterintuitive. We should be growing and learning. God is infinite. And we're constantly learning more and more about God. And then last week, we talked about forgiveness. And that oftentimes is a kind of a counterintuitive thing for us. We don't want to forgive immediately. We want to harbor and hold on to oftentimes and be bitter about things. And it's just sort of a natural tendency. But Jesus counteracts that in his teaching. And today, just like all those other ones, it's as counterintuitive, maybe more counterintuitive, because the message that Jesus has for us in the Sermon on the Plateau today is about being generous. He calls us to be a generous kind of people. And there's a little bit of strangeness here. Now, he's saying, poverty is a gift and be generous, all right? You see the clash there. We're going to kind of unpack that a little bit. But it's a bit counterintuitive. And why does Jesus speak this way? What is this Sermon on the Plateau about? What is Jesus trying to get at? Let's go back and remember what the general flow is of the Gospel of Luke. We're talking about transformation. When Jesus comes, he's the king of a new kingdom, and he's bringing about transformation in this world. And the thing that we want to do is set ourselves right in the midst of that transformation. I was thinking about, I grew up in San Diego, and so did a fair bit of surfing, and I was remembering how oftentimes you're sitting out there and a great wave will come along. And if you don't do everything right, if you don't get in the right position and sort of set yourself there to be able to catch it, it'll go by you and you just end up, you've been waiting for a half hour and you're just staring at this thing that you want to be there on it, but you missed it because you weren't in the right place. And the Sermon on the Mount is really about getting into the right place so that when the wave of transformation comes, you're just sitting pretty and you can be caught up in it and you can ride with the movement of God in your life. That's what this sermon is about. And it's very counterintuitive, but it works. When we follow Jesus' teaching, we place ourselves in position to experience, to be caught up in the transformative power and work of God. And I think deep down, there's something placed inside of all of us that just longs to be a part of what God is doing in the world, that longs to see God working in our souls and bringing about change and growth. And so this is such a precious, precious window of opportunity that we have as we study through the Sermon on the Plateau. Now, the background for the text we're just looking at one little verse today, and the background for this text is, of course, the earlier part that we've been looking at. And I want to just reread a little bit of that because I think it'll help us to get in the right frame of mind. Starting in verse 35 of chapter 6, Jesus says this, "But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back." Hey, that's that counterintuitive stuff. "Then your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High." And that's where I want you to just kind of clue in. All of this stuff that Jesus is encouraging us to do is rooted in these two aspects, these two motivations here, that by doing these things, we'll be blessed, right? It's good for you, and you'll be sons of God Most High. You'll be like God. When we live in this way, we're like God. For all of the things that Jesus has been teaching, he then went on to exemplify them perfectly, in offering himself on the cross and being forgiving and all this kind of stuff. He exemplified it perfectly. And so when we embrace these things, we become like God. And that's blessing for the people around us. So it's blessing for us and blessing for the people around us when we embrace these virtues that Jesus is talking about here on the Sermon on the Plateau. That's kind of a way of background. And it's been true for judging and forgiving and all of this stuff. When we don't judge, when we forgive people, we're like God and we're blessed. And the same is true with generosity. Now look with me in verse 38. Verse 38 says simply this, "Give," and this is the verse we're really going to focus in on today, "give and it will be given to you." Now, scholars often refer to this kind of phrasing, "it will be given," as the divine passive. Because what it really means is that God will bless you. It will be given back to you. The question is, you know, give and it will be given. Well, who's going to give to you? Well, the answer is God will. That's the underlying sense of what the verse is talking about. It's the divine passive. Give and it will be given to you. And listen to this. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap. Now, what's the imagery there about? It's really about a fair person selling grain to somebody else. And what would happen is they'd have this container, a jar of some sort, and they would put the grain in, and he would press it down to make sure that everything was in, and then he would shake it to make sure that all of the grain was really settling in. And then when the space had been, you know, acquired from that shaking and that pressing, he would go and put in a bunch more grain on top of that so that when you bought this amount of grain, you were sure to be getting the entire deal, the whole amount that you paid for. But then sometimes what would happen is in addition to that, you know, it would come overflowing on the top. You know, a really generous kind of salesperson would have it overflowing on the top. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. This is the way God responds to us when we give. It's shaken together. His return is shaken together, pressed down, and then it's overflowing. So he responds in kind, but then goes beyond that. God is more than fair. He's more than just with us in his abundant response to our giving. Then the next part of that verse says, "For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." For with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Now, the measure that's being used is what? It is not mentioning a particular jar or anything. The measure is generosity. That's the measure. So if you're generous, it's saying, then God will be generous in response to you. And if God is generous, then watch out, right? Because God owns everything. God owns everything. And so when the person who owns everything is generous towards you, then you know you better watch out, because it's going to be overflowing. Mark adds in his version of this, with the measure you use, and it's a slightly different context, but the same idea, basically. With the measure you use, Mark says, it will be measured to you and even more. Now, you might be asking as you read this, well, okay, let's back up a second. What kind of generosity are we talking about here? I mean, are we talking about, you know, resources or material things? Are we talking about spiritual things, relationships? What kind of generosity are we talking about? And if you look at the context in which Jesus makes these statements about generosity, I think you need to conclude that it's all of the above, because he's been talking about money just before this, about lending money to others and being generous in that way. But then he's been talking about the way you appraise another person, right? When you see somebody and you sort of make an appraisal of who they are, you're not supposed to be judging. And you're not supposed to condemn that person. You're supposed to be accepting, right? And you're supposed to be encouraging. Those are the opposites of judgment and condemnation, to be accepting and encouraging. So it's a generous stance towards people in a kind of a relational way. And then, obviously, we talked last week about this, the concept of forgiveness. Well, you know, you can be generous about forgiveness, right? When somebody has wronged you, you can be quick to say, "I forgive you." Or even if they don't even ask, you could just be generous about forgiveness. So generosity, in the way that Jesus is talking about here, cuts across all of that. It's material, yes. It's about physical things and money and all that. But it's also about relationships. And then at the bottom, it's really spiritual. A generous spirit manifests itself in all kinds of ways. And we often want God, right, to tell us what to do. Lord, tell me what to do. Give me a particular action. And what he's more focused on oftentimes is who we're becoming. Because if he can transform us on the deep inside of us, then what we do will be obvious. If we can become generous people, you know, deep down, then we don't have to ask at every turn, well, should I do this or should I do that? It will flow out of us. And God is oftentimes more focused on who we're becoming than in particular the very little thing that we want to do. And so when we talk about generosity today, we're talking about it in that global sense. It's a kind of generosity that crosses lines. It's material generosity. It's relational generosity. It's spiritual generosity. It's all of that. That's what Jesus is getting at when he says, give, and it will be given to you. He's a global kind of a generosity. Now, I mentioned this already, but listen closely to what Jesus is really saying. He's saying, blessed are the poor and give generously. If you add up, right, the Sermon on the Plateau, he's saying, blessed are the poor and give generously. Embrace your poverty and your hunger and your suffering and your rejection. That was sort of the definition of what it means to be in poverty. Your poverty, hunger, suffering, and rejection. And then from that place, what does he say? He says, love your enemy, lend to people, accept people, and be forgiving. Right? You see the almost contradiction there. That it's almost like have nothing and give everything. Have nothing and give everything. I mean, it's like kind of a crazy thought because, you know, I get this picture of a homeless venture capitalist, right? You don't have anything, and yet you're giving all that you have. Or you quit your job to become a philanthropist, is the idea. Or you're going to give all your food away and invite a bunch of people over for dinner. That's what Jesus is really saying here in the Sermon on the Mount, right? It's a craziness. How does it work? How can this be done? How can we be people who see poverty as a gift and yet are generous in all these ways that Jesus has described here? Well, we spent the night this summer in Yosemite, and we were in the Tuolumne Meadows, and we just spent one night there, and then after we were going to drive down to San Diego, and so we wanted to go down the eastern side of the Sierras, and so we drove over the Tioga Pass, and as we were just getting to the Tioga Pass, we came to the Tioga Lake. Maybe you've seen that if you've driven through there. It's a gorgeous lake. It's fed by glacier water. It's just beautiful color. You look in it, it's just kind of glassy, and it's blue. It's just beautiful lake, and people are camping around it and fishing and all this kind of stuff. And then the lake empties out into the Lee Vining River, I guess it is, and then goes down near the Tioga Pass there. So that's the Tioga Lake. We went past the Tioga Lake and oohed and awed at the beauty of it. And then we went down the pass, and we came down to the bottom. And those of you who know this, you know Mono Lake is right at the bottom of the pass. And so we pulled over at Mono Lake. Now, Mono Lake is a little different than Tioga Lake. Mono Lake is what is called an endoraic lake or a terminal lake. And that just means, the Greek word means that it flows in itself. It doesn't empty out into anything. So water comes into it, but it doesn't go anywhere else. Now, we kind of went around Mono Lake and enjoyed, you know, the sights. And one of the things, you know, it's very, very salty, and the edges of it are kind of frothy and not so inviting. And there's tons of flies everywhere. I mean, just, you know, and the kids are running around. These flies are just going all over the place. And there was a little, or in the study guide or whatever we had with us, it said, you know, stick your finger into the lake and taste how salty it is. And so, you know, I'm sitting there, and it says do that. And I stuck my finger into the lake, and the flies all go scattering, and I put it to my mouth, and my wife is standing there looking at me, and she says, what are you doing? And I said, I'm just tasting the lake, you know. And I was thinking that would be the last kiss that we ever had, because the way she looked at me sticking my finger and tasting the lake. It's kind of that feel. It's a briny, uninviting kind of a lake, right? So I'm thinking about these things, and I'm thinking about this text, and so I thought, well, let me research, is there a name, scientific name, for a lake that was there at one point, but nothing was coming in, and so it all emptied out? And so I did some research and looked around, and there's a scientific name for that. It's called a former lake. So Lake Agassiz, for example, would be a former lake. Now, this is a lake that you may not have heard about. I didn't know about this. It was in the Midwest. You know, long time ago, scientists say it was, you know, covered a huge portion of the Midwest in the United States and part of Canada. And, you know, this lake was bigger than the Great Lakes, all the Great Lakes put together. Huge, massive lake. But what happened is the water started to empty out, and there wasn't a source coming in. And so it ended up drying up. And then, I mean, there's still a couple of lakes there, but they're only part of the size. Okay, so you have these three different kinds of lakes. You have a lake that's sort of a proper lake that has water coming in, it's fed, and then there's water going out. And then you have a terminal lake, which has water coming in, but no water goes out at all, right? And then you have a former lake, which is lake where there's no water coming in, but all the water's going out, and it disappears. Now, I know you came today to learn about lakes, right? No, you didn't come to learn about lakes. But here's what I want you to picture and think about with respect to this. As followers of Christ or just people in general, you know, we can be a lot like those terminal lakes where we sort of receive the blessing of the water coming in, the blessing of God, and it comes in, and yet there's no outlet for it. And it just sort of, you know what, it just sort of collects in there. And I think spiritually, it has the same effect on us as a terminal lake, right? It gets that salty, sort of briny, kind of lots of flies, spiritually kind of feel to it. Because there's something flowing in, but nothing's going out. And then there's those of us who are like a former lake. We end up like a former lake. Because we give and we give and we give, but we're doing it in our own strength, not trusting in God at all, not receiving anything from God. And so we end up being sort of dried out and crusty, like a former lake bed, right? And what's meant to happen, and what Jesus is talking about here in the Sermon on the Mount, is that we should be like a proper lake, where there's a generous inflow from above, and then there's a generous outflow that goes and feeds and nourishes. And yes, the blessing comes into our lives, and we get to enjoy it for a season, but we can't hang on to it. If you hang on to it, it gets stale, right? That's the picture that Jesus is painting here. And it's not just Jesus who's painting this picture. The Bible is very clear about how this works. A couple of other scriptures that point in this direction. 2 Corinthians 9:8. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. See? God will fill you so that you can bless others, so that you can be generous. That's a principle that's just embedded in the whole of the Bible. 2 Corinthians 9:11. You will be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. Romans 8:32. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? That idea that God invented generosity, really. When it comes down to it, God invented generosity. The greatest act of generosity was for him to give up his own son, which he did freely, and his son embraced the mission. And he went to the cross to suffer on that cross, to be sacrificed for our sin, and to atone for our sin, that he might give to us freedom from sin, righteousness. See, that was God invented generosity. And so all of this comes out of our growing into be like him. And if you're somebody who's exploring the Christian faith and you're kind of at the beginning stages, you have questions about it, this is really the key, this Romans 8:32. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? That God initiates with you. God wants to draw you into his presence, into his company. He wants to love on you and build you up and heal you and make your life whole again and redeem you and bless you in all of these ways. And then out of that, you will be turned into a person who can then bless others, can flow from you. That's what Jesus wants to do. That's what God wants to do in your life. And that's what he's about. And so really, if you're new in this process and you're just starting, you know, the Alpha Ministry is a great place for you to explore some of these questions. But at some point, really, the initial step is simply to receive from God. It's not to do something. We often think that to start a relationship with God, I got to do something. No, it's about receiving something first. God initiates with generosity in Jesus Christ. And we merely receive his gift of forgiveness. And then it's from that receiving his grace that everything else begins to take place. It's really important that if you're kind of exploring or new in the faith, that you understand that dynamic. God initiates first. You just receive it. You receive the grace. But there are more verses that talk about this. Philippians 4:19. And my God will meet all your needs according to his glorious riches in Christ Jesus. And then Proverbs 11:25. It's not just a New Testament thing. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed. And I had to cut out a lot of verses, right? These are themes that are deep into the teaching of Scripture. That a Christian is really just a reservoir of God's blessing. And God's blessing comes in from on high, and then it's dispensed to others. That's how it works. It's not a Christians are not terminal lakes, and we're not former lakes. But we're just proper lakes, where the water comes in and the grace flows out. There's an in and out. And you get to enjoy it a little bit while it's there, but you got to be able to let it go. Got to be able to let it go. That's what generosity is about. Now, obviously, if we're going to be generous people, this requires a measure of faith. We're often giving, you probably experienced this, we're giving before the replacement has come in, right? We're often called upon to give before the replacement has come in. And whether that's money or forgiveness, maybe forgiveness costs you a lot, and it hurts, and you don't know if you'll be okay on the other side of offering forgiveness in this situation. Or when you accept somebody, and you wonder how others will treat you for accepting this person who maybe is a little different, right? There are moments of insecurity associated with being generous. There are moments of insecurity associated with being generous. We would love to be generous without having to have any insecurity, right? That's what I would like that. And oftentimes, this is how it works. We say, well, I'm going to wait till that day when being generous won't be dangerous anymore because I'll have enough that I can do it. What we're really saying in that situation is we want to give out of our own strength. We want to depend on ourselves. We don't want to have to depend on God, right, by being generous. We want to be able to be generous but not really lose anything and have no danger in it. And that day will never come. Because being generous is always dangerous. It always requires faith. There's always that moment of insecurity. There's always that moment of letting go and trusting God while you wait to be refilled. And so because we're afraid of that, we delay and we become terminal or former lakes, you know. Been reading this book on waves. It just came out. It's a fascinating book. And it's a lot about surfing, but it's also about waves in the ocean that aren't near the beach and how they work and the strange things going on with waves and all of this. But big part of it is about guys who surf on giant waves, like the biggest waves that there are. And what you realize as you're reading about these guys is that they become adrenaline junkies, right? There's a danger there that they can't live without. And if they go too long and there's not big enough waves, they start to get depressed and all this stuff, right? Because they want to challenge themselves. They love that danger. You're going to probably think I'm really strange on this, but as I walk with the Lord and he turns me into more and more of a generous person, I believe it's possible. I think Jesus wants us to become generosity junkies. Really. Really. Where we're in that moment of insecurity and it's dangerous to be generous. And yet, we've come to love that moment because that's where we see God working in our lives and in the world around us. We know there's danger there. This is going to hurt. It's going to be hard. But I'm going to live the life of faith and trust God, and it's exhilarating. Maybe even a little bit like dropping in on a huge wave that could smash you. You could get hurt being generous. But that's what Jesus is saying. Be a generous person and trust God in the midst of it. That's what he's saying. And again, materially, relationally, forgiveness, acceptance of others, spiritually, all of that. Generosity requires faith. It also requires sincerity. Well, let me say it this way. You can be generous without being sincere, but it's not as good. We can do generous things when we don't really mean it or we have a different motive, but we're missing out on the deep, profound blessing that goes with sincere generosity. I came across this illustration this week from Tim Keller, and I found this very convicting. It's from his book, The Prodigal God, which I have not read yet, but I did read this illustration. He says this, once upon a time, I guess he likes to make these sort of, you know, fantasy stories to make a point. Once upon a time, there was a gardener who grew an enormous carrot. So he took it to his king and said, "My lord, this is the greatest carrot I've ever grown or ever will grow. Therefore, I want to present it to you as a token of my love and respect for you." The king was touched and discerned the man's heart. So as the gardener turned to go to the king, the king said, "Wait, you are clearly a good steward of the earth. I own a plot of land right next to yours. I want to give it to you freely as a gift so you can garden it all." And the gardener was amazed and delighted and went home rejoicing. But there was a nobleman at the king's court who overheard all this. And he said, "My, if that's what you get for a carrot, what if you give the king something better?" So the next day, the nobleman came before the king, and he was leading a handsome black stallion. He bowed low and said, "My lord, I breed horses, and this is the greatest horse I have ever bred or ever will. Therefore, I want to present it to you as a token of my love and respect for you." But the king discerned his heart and said, "Thank you," and took the horse and merely dismissed him. The nobleman was perplexed. So the king said, "Let me explain. That gardener was giving me the carrot, but you were giving yourself the horse." True generosity, right, is not aimed at self. This week we had our house appraised. We were trying to refinance, and the appraiser came, and the first thing he did was run into my car. Good way to start, right? So I went outside because I heard the crash, and went outside and looked, and I said, "That's my car." And he said, "Oh, I'm here to appraise your house." Yeah, your car's not worth very much now. But So, you know, we sort of deal with the dent in the car a little bit, and so we kind of think, okay, we got to move on here. And so he comes into the house, and he walks in the house, and he sees a cross at the top, and he says, "I knew you were a Christian." He said, "There was a lot of grace flowing when I hit your car." Now, I'm going to level with you here. I think God is doing something in me, and I'm becoming a more gracious person and a generous person. But I also know that I wanted to get a good appraisal on my house, right? And so I wasn't going to make such a big, right? Isn't that tension inside of us? We give, but we also want to take care of ourselves. That's how we are as human beings. And maybe it's always going to be that way a little bit, that there's conflicting motives inside of us. And by God's grace and his mercy, he grows us more and more towards generosity, true generosity. And I think we need to uphold that. That's where we need to be headed. Because when it's sincere, then it's deep, and the joy that Jesus is talking about is really at present. And I think that's why the Bible talks about God loves a cheerful giver. There's something about that cheerfulness that indicates true giving, not giving because you want something, right? So we need to be aware that we're never going to arrive in this life at perfection in that. But at the same time, we can be moving towards, with God's help, sincere generosity. So two things, just this requires faith and this requires sincerity. And then I just want to finish with a thought on the potential of generosity. You know, I'm a pastor, so I get emails and booklets about all kinds of things going on in the church world, right? And there's all these gimmicks and these techniques, and there's people are just searching for some sort of spiritual spark to start a fire in their community of faith, right? This is all over the place. We just want things to be better and to grow more. We want to see people's lives change. And we're just looking for these things. And I sat back and I thought about the Sermon on the Plateau this week. And I thought, you know what? It's not as complicated as all that. That the greatest spark might just come when we decide to act generously towards someone who's wronged us. When we decide to forgive. When we decide to accept. When we decide not to judge. We decide to give of our resources. These are the kinds of things that really God is looking for. These are the things that start bonfires and forest fires of spiritual growth and transformation. Look at the potential of generosity in the New Testament. One day Jesus was teaching, and all these people were coming to listen to him, thousands of people, and they were just, he's going on and on and on and on, and teaching, and they're all still listening, but then they like look up and they go, oh, it's dinner time and there's no food around here for miles and miles and miles. How do we get in this situation? And they're starving. And there's one little boy there who has 5 loaves of bread and 2 fishes. And the disciple Andrew finds him. And you know that little boy is hungry because he's a little boy. And little boys are always hungry, right? And so he's got these 5 loaves and these 2 fishes. And Andrew, we don't know exactly what happened, but I guess Andrew asked him if he'd be willing to give these up and contribute them to the whole. And even though he's hungry, he acts generously. And he gives up his fish and he gives up his loaves. And Jesus takes those 5 loaves and those 2 fish, and the rest is history, right? 5,000 people fed on this little spark of generosity from this little boy who brings them to Jesus. And you and I, we gather here on Sundays, and we gather in our home groups, and we bring our 5 loaves, and we bring our 2 fishes. And Jesus is saying to us that if we're just generous with the little that we have, watch out, because I will be generous in return. And when I'm generous, you better watch out, because I own everything. Spiritually, physically, materially, I got it all, you know? And so if you use the measure of generosity, then I'm going to use my measure of generosity with you. And it's going to, you know, just watch out. That's when you're going to see some transformation happening in people's lives. That's where you're going to see the kingdom coming and the Spirit moving. And we have these opportunities in our home groups where people can get resourced as we bless them. And in our church, you know, as we are generous, people will be resourced. Ministries that we're doing will be resourced. They'll be able to continue because they'll have the resources that they need. People will be accepted when they walk into our home group or into our church community. They'll feel acceptance because we're being generous with our acceptance, not judging and condemning as Jesus talked about. And then people will be forgiven, you know, those relationships that have just been on the rocks for years and years and years, and there's brokenness there, been harboring bitterness. And if we're generous, then we'll offer forgiveness to people, and they'll be freed from that trap that we have them in. That's how you start a spiritual fire. And people will grow, as Jesus talked about, to be a learner. And then if we take all of this and we aim it outward, we aim it towards the people around us. And then the people, like, count me in. You know, people get resourced who need resources when we're generous. And I think about some of the other ministries that we have. You know, the taking care of the compassion kids, you know. We just had 24 kids taken care of in Peru in one particular place because of the generosity in this congregation. Now, what will God do with that little bit of generosity is maybe that's a spark for something much greater, you know. Because this is how it works. A little bit of generosity God takes and exponentially increases because he brings his generosity to bear. And that's what he's calling us to become, people of generosity. People get resourced and accepted and forgiven and they grow. And that's the spark that will bring about the spiritual bonfire. A long time ago, I think it was maybe on the opening Sunday of this church a few years back, told the story of Hattie Mae Wyatt. This is back in the 1800s in Philadelphia. This little girl was on her way to Sunday school, and the Sunday school was so packed that she couldn't get in, and she really wanted to go to Sunday school. And they weren't in Berkeley, because that doesn't happen. And so she wanted to go to Sunday school, and the pastor scooped her up and carried her through the crowd, and she was crying because she wasn't able to get into Sunday school. And he said to her, it's okay. He didn't really have a plan or anything, but he said, it's okay. We're gonna build a new Sunday school.